Welcome to EncLive On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. EncLive On Air is a podcast from EncLive, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, EncLive covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by Avio Oncology, Sumanta K. Paul, MD, FASCO, a professor in the Department of Medical Oncology and Therapeutics Research and co-director of the Kidney Cancer Program at City of Hope, walks us through research presented at the 2022 Genitourinary Cancer Symposium, including data from the TiVo-3 trial and findings from the NeoAvix trial, exploring avelumab plus axitinib for patients with high-risk non-metastatic clear cell renal cell carcinoma. TiVo-3 compared tivozanib versus sorafenib for patients with advanced RCC who have received at least two prior systemic therapies. It is one of the few trials to analyze patients in the refractory setting. Paul, a co-author on TiVo-3, said that the odds of experiencing long-term progression-free survival was 5 times greater for patients randomized to tivozanib. At 3 years, long-term PFS rates were 12.3% for tivozanib versus 2.4% with sorafenib. Tivozanib remained superior to sorafenib at 4 years, with PFS rates of 7.6% and 0% respectively. Paul added that the data at 3 and 4 years was incredibly impressive and unexpected in refractory patients. Tivozanib, he said, should be considered for third-line therapy, and added it is reasonable to consider the VEGF-TKI in the second-line setting for some patients. Paul went on to say he is excited about the possibility of neoadjuvant therapy in RCC. He was particularly intrigued by data from the NeoAvix trial presented by Axel Beck's MD, PhD. In that open-label single-arm phase 2 trial, neoadjuvant avelumab and axitinib induced a partial response in 30% of patients. Median primary tumor downsizing was 20%. 10 of the responding patients remained disease-free at the data cutoff. The field of RCC, he said, could be headed to even more aggressive therapy as investigators explore triplet combinations. Paul added that it will be important to consider quality of life when making treatment decisions and conducting clinical trials. Thank you so much, Dr. Paul, for taking the time to speak with us on an episode of EncLive On Air. Happy to have you with us today.
Oh, thanks a lot, Caroline. Really thrilled to be here.
Great. So let's get into it. So starting with the updated results from TiVo-3 that we saw at ASCO GU of this year, what really stood out to you from the updated efficacy results?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's really critical to recognize that TiVo-3 is one of the few trials that we have in the refractory disease space. It addresses patients who have had 3 to 4 prior lines of treatment, and frankly speaking, is one of the few studies that we have to really address that population of patients. So, you know, it's exciting to see that patients are deriving long-term and sustained benefit now with landmark analyses out to 3 and 4 years.
So what would you say is really the significance of these data? How are they impacting your discussions with patients in this setting?
You know, I've always been quite comfortable using tivozanib in the refractory setting. I've had experiences through my participation as one of the steering committee members in the TiVo-3 trial, seeing patients derive long-term benefit. It's great to see that sort of vetted in the context of the phase 3 assessment. So I can really sort of see with my very own eyes now with the Kaplan-Meier curves that patients out to 3 to 4 years are still sustaining on therapy. I was really blown away that if you look out to even the 4-year mark, you have about 7.5% of patients who remain on therapy with tivozanib, none on sorafenib in the control arm. So for me, it's a beacon of hope for patients. It really allows me to tell them that, you know, there's a pretty reasonable chance that they may potentially derive long-term benefit with this therapy if they approach it.
It was also interesting to see that in the subgroup analysis, even older patients seem to derive benefit from tivozanib.
Yeah, and I think that might sort of align to some extent with the tolerability of the drug. I've had much more ease of use with tivozanib as compared to other targeted therapies in this setting. So that certainly may potentially play into why folks are faring better with it.
So looking at other studies that were presented at ASCO GU, what really stood out to you and why?
You know, I'll first highlight some work that was presented by my fellows. I was really thrilled this year to have 4 fellows that got Conquer Cancer Foundation Merit Awards for really exceptional work that they're doing. I'll highlight the work from Nazli Dizman, a fellow of mine who's now doing internal medicine at Yale. and Luis Meza, a fellow who's still working with me, they presented updates to a randomized phase one experience looking at nivolumab and ipilimumab with or without the agent CBM-588. This is a live bacterial product. And this agent actually seemed to elicit a tremendous, tremendous clinical benefit in patients who are getting Nivo-Ipi as compared to Nivo-Ipi alone in a small randomized trial that we did. I thought that that was mind-boggling. At the meeting this year, they presented some really nice correlative work that linked toxicities with the presence or absence of certain species, microbial species in the gut. We have a lot of ongoing work to look at metabolomics. So this is a really rich data set. It was just published in Nature Medicine 2 weeks ago, and we hope to really build on it in the weeks and months to come. You know, beyond the Nivo-Ipi CBM study, one of the other things that I'm really excited about is to see some of the neoadjuvant designs that are emerging. There's so much to be learned from neoadjuvant clinical trials. Axel Bex presented a fantastic study looking at neoadjuvant therapy with axitinib and avelumab in combination. You know, what was interesting is that, you know, we didn't see that there was a tremendous clinical response with this regimen. We saw a response rate of around 25 to 30%. I would have expected a lot more out of this, frankly, in terms of the clinical response to therapy, because that's basically what we see with half of what we see with combination therapy in the metastatic setting. Having said that, you know, I will say that I'm nonetheless compelled by a lot of the biologic data that they had. What was quite concerning is that you can see that there are various patches of immune deserts and immune rich areas within tumor, which means that it may be very complicated to treat patients and treat them uniformly based on their biological characteristics.
Now, I also saw that there was a study that was presented at the meeting looking at frontline tivozanib showing non-inferiority to other TKIs. If a patient is not eligible for a combination approach in the frontline setting, would you consider using tivozanib in the frontline space?
The agent that I tend to use most frequently in the frontline space for patients with kidney cancer who aren't eligible for immunotherapy is cabozantinib, and that really rests on the CABOSUN clinical trial. Randomized phase two experience with 150 patients showed a PFS advantage with cabo over sunitinib. I think that experience is quite compelling. It would probably steer me towards using cabozantinib frontline in the bulk of patients who are ineligible for immunotherapy for whatever reason.
There was also data looking at second-line cabozantinib showing similar responses, regardless of frontline combination therapy. Did any of that data sort of sway your opinion on use of tivozanib in the second-line setting?
You know, I always feel like it's important to put our best foot forward in the frontline setting, and that generally entails therapy with cabozantinib up front for me. I do feel it's the best-in-class TKI. And so I tend to use cabozantinib nivolumab up front for therapy. Having said that, you know, the second line setting goals shift a little bit and they become palliative in nature for many patients. And with that in mind, I'm very encouraged to see the long-term data with tivozanib. And after a regimen like cabozantinib and nivolumab, I think it's reasonable to challenge with a very potent and specific VEGF inhibitor like tivozanib right afterwards.
And speaking of the combination of cabozantinib and nivolumab, we saw not only updated efficacy results, but also health-related quality of life data. I'm sure those findings were assuring to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So critical that we focus on health-related quality of life as we, you know, kind of focus on what we're doing to our patients through the course of trying to make them better with these very sometimes aggressive systemic therapies.
So sort of summarizing all of these takeaways, what do you think that these data signify about where the field of RCC is headed?
You know, I think that the field of RCC may be headed towards even more aggressive therapy with triplets and quadruplets. I think that, you know, it's going to be really critical for us to weigh heavily the goals of care. I think quality of life really needs to be put at the forefront. And so, for instance, the data that we presented with the live bacterial product constitutes one way of really enhancing efficacy without really compromising safety and tolerability to any significant extent. So I think that probably the number one thing that I'm excited about right now is a way to manipulate the microbiome and enhance response above all else. But beyond that, you know, I think that it's important that we add this dimension of quality of life research to whatever we're doing. One of my fellows, Chris Bergerow, is very, very focused on that. She's based down in Brazil. And I think really is spearheading efforts to make that a primary focus and develop skills that are more relevant to our kidney cancer patients.
Well said. Is there any ongoing research that you'd like to highlight before we close?
Yeah, you know, right now, building on this success that we had with our clinical trial of nivolumab and ipilimumab with and without this live bacterial product, we have a study that's launching looking at cabozantinib and nivolumab with or without the same product. And so I'm really hoping that in the same way as we were able to augment the impact of nivo-ipi, we'll be able to do the same with a TKI and IO combination. So it really remains to be seen how that's going to work, but I'm quite eager to see those results.
As are we. Well, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Paul. It's always a pleasure.
Caroline, thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by AVO Oncology. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLive SOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.